This morning's Bible reading would be from Genesis chapter 2, verses 20 through 25. So Adam gave names to all cattle, to the birds of the air, and to every beast in the field. But for Adam there was not found a helper comparable to him. And the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall on Adam, and he slept, and he took one of his ribs and closed up the flesh in its place. Then the rib which the Lord God had taken from man, he made into a woman, and he brought her to the man. And Adam said, "This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, because she was taken out of man. Therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh." And they were both naked, the man and his wife, and were not ashamed.
Good to see everyone here this morning. We appreciate you being out this early morning. And we are going to continue in our study during this time period of the Ten Commandments. And this morning we are going to focus on the seventh commandment contained in Exodus chapter 20 and verse 14. It reads simply, "You shall not commit adultery." One of the things about this particular study compared to some of the others we've had in this series is that the Bible, the Hebrew Bible, uses only one word that can be translated by our English word adultery. And we will see as we progress this morning that that Hebrew word has a very precise meaning. And really, as far as scholars are concerned, it's universally understood as to what it means. And so, with the shortness of time, we're not going to cover all that could be said about this subject this morning, but we are going to try to look at the basics. I had Brother Tommy read the Genesis passage that he read, because it is really the basis for the commandment, "Thou shalt not commit adultery." As we look at this passage, we see that woman was created by God as the suitable companion for man. So the man-woman relationship in the marriage relationship is something that is God designed, God ordained, and God ordered. He instituted the family. And the family is created when a man and a woman, when the man leaves his family where he was raised, and he takes a wife, and they are joined together, and they complete that new family unit. When we look at Genesis 2, we see that the husband and wife should cleave to one another. And that is expressive of the marriage bond, a bond that God intended to be honored and respected. So if we just think logically, if God created it this way, he ordained it this way, he ordered it this way, then it's very logical that when it comes down to the fundamental commandments of his law for man, that he would prohibit adultery. Now, I mentioned that the word is very specific, and in Hebrew it is the word naaf, and that doesn't relate to any English word that we would use, just simply the fact that it is the only word that can be translated adultery in the Old Testament. And I simply, by point of reference, compare that to the previous lesson on "You shall not kill," where there are 10 different Hebrew words that some English Bibles translate by the English word "kill." And so there's all kinds of different kinds of killing in the Old Testament. Not all of them are murder. And you have to make that distinction when you look at that commandment. Well, in this case, that word is very precise, and the meaning of it is clear. According to the theological word book of the Old Testament, in defining this word, it says this root, because they have various forms of the word, the way Hebrew is written, but it represents sexual intercourse with the wife or the betrothed of another man. And so when we look at the seventh commandment, there are a number of things that would impress us with the idea of how significant or how important this is in terms of God's desire and His design for the marriage relationship. As we mentioned, it's set forth in Genesis that a man was to cleave to his wife and that they become one flesh. And Adam expressed that. He said, this woman is now the bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. And so that is an intimate relationship. And while we can't go into it in detail this morning because of the time limitations, if you go on and look in Genesis chapter 3 after the fall, we're told the woman is told in Genesis 3:16 that her desire is to be to her husband. Her loyalty is to her husband. And she is to have a desire for him in all aspects of that relationship, not just sexual desire. And later on in the next couple of verses in Genesis 3, verses 17 through 19, Adam is told it will be his job by the very sweat of his brow to bring forth the sustenance, the produce of the land. And man is given the responsibility for the protection and the provision for his mate. And God set that all up, and that was the order in which He put it. And so what we see when we come to this command, you shall not commit adultery, is that in some ways adultery is the supreme act of disrespect for God's order. As is all sin, an exercise of man's will against God's will. It is very interesting that, you know, in the garden there was one command, don't eat of the tree. And Satan enticed Adam and Eve so that they would please themselves rather than God, and they went ahead and ate of the tree. And so, before they are expelled from the garden, God sets up this relationship of husband and wife, assigns those duties, and says this is what God has done. So as we look at that and we understand that, then what we see is that when we disregard that, we are rebelling against the very order that God created for the relationship between man and woman. Another, I think, interesting observation is to look at the placement of this command in the series of the Ten Commandments. When you come to the latter five or six of the Ten Commandments that deal with man's relationship with other men, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. We looked at the first one, you shall not murder. But then comes, you shall not commit adultery before any of the others. It's probably not accidental. L.J. Copps, writing in the Theological Order Book of the Old Testament, says that the adultery constitutes the stealing of another man's flesh. Murder's the stealing of his life. Adultery is the stealing of his being, of his relationship. And if you want to look at order, that makes it a higher offense than just stealing his things. You can't take his life. You can't take his own flesh. And that's what his wife is. Copps goes on to say, even desire for another man's wife is wrong. And that's the 10th commandment. And obviously we're going to get to there. Thou shalt not covet. When we get to there, one of the things specifically they're told they cannot covet is another man's wife. You don't steal what belongs to another in the marriage relationship. Now, the penalty for the violation of the seventh commandment was severe. Leviticus chapter 20 and verse 10 says, if there is a man who commits adultery with another man's wife, one who commits adultery with his friend's wife, the adulterer and the adulteress shall surely be put to death. Now, it's interesting to note, the command puts the emphasis upon the man. Don't take another man's wife. But if the sin is committed, both the man and the woman engaged in the sin are put to death. And so this, I think, establishes the basic importance of this command in the Ten Commandments. One of the modern-day questions that gets talked about an awful lot is adultery in contrast to fornication. And I think it merits a couple of comments because of the nature of modern-day discussions about these things. But fornication is a totally separate word in the Hebrew language. Naoth, the word for adultery, can only be translated adultery. Fornication is sexual immorality. But specifically, it is sexual immorality that does not violate the marriage covenant. When you commit adultery, you are violating at least one and possibly two marriage covenants. The covenant that the adulterous man has made with his own wife, and if he takes the wife of another, he is violating their marriage covenant. In the Hebrew, and we're going to talk about several words here, the word zana is the word for fornication. And again, using the theological word book of the Old Testament, it says the literal meaning of this word is illicit heterosexual intercourse. The word regularly refers to women. It refers only twice to men. And that's Exodus 34:16, Numbers 25 and verse 1. So it can be committed by other, but in the Old Testament there's more said about women committing fornication than there is about men. Now, the theological word book of the Old Testament compares these two words, adultery and fornication. And when it's talking about naoth, the word for adultery, it says this word should not be compared with zana, which is illicit heterosexual relations, but is not necessarily in violation of the marriage vow. There's another word that occurs in the Old Testament, particularly a lot in the book of Ezekiel, and that's the Hebrew word taznuth, which is usually translated as to play the harlot. And so it describes an engaging in the sexual activity indiscriminately outside of the marriage bond. And particularly Ezekiel uses it spiritually because he uses it to describe Israel and Judah's idolatry that led them into captivity. That they were Jehovah's bride, but they played the harlot. They made themselves available to all these other idols, to all these other things. And so this is a rather long reading, but I think it's significant. And coming from the theological word book, it says certain distinctions exist between zana and the parallel root naop to commit adultery. Naop commonly refers to men rather than women, and naop connotes sexual intercourse between a married person and someone other than his or her spouse. The two words are set in significant contrast in Hosea chapter 4, verses 13 and 14, where the daughters are said to commit whoredom or to commit harlotry, depending upon the translation you use. And the spouses are accused with committing adultery. So the very clear distinction, your daughters can commit fornication, your wives, if they're unfaithful, commit adultery. Never is the person, and this has to do with naoth, said to be unmarried. The word is sufficiently parallel, however, that they can be used for the same person concerning Gomer in the book of Hosea and concerning Israel in Ezekiel 16:32-36 as an unfaithful nation. A third distinction that naoth is not used to designate the professional prostitute. Similarity between the words are found that the facts are both used in a figurative sense as well as literal sense in the Old Testament. So the Old Testament speaks of physical adultery, physical fornication, physical prostitution. But it also uses those as spiritual terms for the unfaithfulness of Judah and Israel in turning to idols. Now, we're not going to spend any time, because my time's about up, in the New Testament this morning. But I will point out that there's a little difference between the Greek in the New Testament and the Hebrew in the Old Testament, in that Greek uses one word, various forms of the word makeo, for adultery. So if you go to the passages like in the Gospels where Jesus says a man cannot divorce his wife except for adultery, it is this word, and it means the same thing as naoph does in Hebrew, unfaithfulness in the marriage relationship. The Greek word porneo, which you would probably recognize because we get the English word pornography from it, the Greek word is more general than the Hebrew word zana, because the Greek word is used by the Greeks of any form of sexual immorality. And so with the Greeks, they would include homosexuality as an expression of porneo. But in the Old Testament, zana is not used for homosexuality. There's another entire word that is used to condemn the action of homosexuality. So, to bring it to a close this morning, I want to focus just a moment on the severe penalty. The adultery was, according to what we read in Leviticus chapter 20 and verse 10, resulted in the death penalty for both parties. If you look at the book of Leviticus in a little bit more detail, you'll find that in almost all cases, that death penalty is the stoning of both the man and the woman. There is one case of incest where they are to be burned with fire rather than be stoned, but it's still a death penalty. But you know, then just as now, not all cases of adultery are open or even discovered. You could live in Israel and get by in this life committing adultery and people not discovering it. But that doesn't mean it didn't have its consequences. Solomon says in Proverbs 6 and verse 32, the one who commits adultery with a woman is lacking sense. He who would destroy himself does it. So what Solomon says is, even if it doesn't get caught and administered and executed because of it, you still pay a price for it. There's ruin involved. And I think, without going into a lot of detail, we can understand people living a life of deceit. And if they have any sense of propriety at all, the guilt or the fear of being caught, that type of thing. And so we recognize that what Solomon is talking about is a very practical thing. Even if it went unpunished in terms of the matter of somebody being stoned to death, it still had its consequences. Another thing we would point out is that not all sexual activity outside of marriage was punishable by death. And again, for time, I'm only going to give one example. There's others in the book of Leviticus. If a man lies carnally with a woman who is a slave acquired for another man, so another man has bought her to be a slave, but has in no way been redeemed, and so the man has not claimed her as a concubine or a wife, she's just a female slave, there shall be punishment, but they shall not, however, be put to death because she was not free. So there's going to be a penalty. You've taken another man's slave, and you're going to have to pay for that. But he said they won't be put to death. Another example, very quickly, is if a man came upon a virgin, a young unmarried woman, and he forced himself upon her, They were not put to death, but he was required to marry her, and he could never divorce her no matter what. There was no way out of that relationship because he had initiated it by an act of sexual immorality. And there are several others in the book of Leviticus. And finally, there are some other sins other than adultery, sexual sins, that are punishable by death. And so adultery was not the only one. These are listed in Leviticus 20, verses 11 through 16. They include some forms of incest. Some incest would involve another man's wife. If a father took his son's wife, that's both adultery and incest, and that was condemned to death. But other forms of incest that did not involve someone's wife are also punishable by death. Homosexuality is specifically, it's a different word, but it's punishable by death, and bestiality is punishable by death. So adultery is not the only sexual sin punishable by death, but it is a severe penalty. So God ordained the marriage relationship for the greater good of mankind, and his law fundamentally prohibits the violation of that marital bond, that marital relationship. Brother Gary has the closing prayer, and then we'll be dismissed to our classes.